This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Here we are with Rachel Hott. We're talking about communication, and one of the things that we're talking about is that people don't always communicate what they mean. Today's program is about trying to find out the meaning behind what people say. Because sometimes a person may think they convey what they mean, but they don't. Or maybe they do and you don't hear it. We want to find out about that. For example, somebody could say the expression, "That's fine." And that could mean it's fine, or it could mean they're angry at you. That's fine. Now, we have many clues. We have things like their body language, their attitude, the fact that they spit when they speak, any number of things that could be indicating to you on some level that they're not exactly what they're saying. Sarcasm. But there are many more clues. And we've learned through a thing called neurolinguistic programming that there is many signs that we could see, understand, communicate. And that's what we call in Rachel Hott. Rachel Hott, welcome back to WBAI.
Hi, thanks a lot. Back to school, back to work, right?
Back to school, back to work. Dr. Rachel Hott, by the way. PhD, clinical psychology, who has studied people's communication systems for many years. Let's talk about it, Rachel.
Okay. So what we're really looking at is when a person is speaking that they absolutely know what they're talking about. They're giving their ideas. And what happens is when you're listening to them, you also think you know what they're talking about. And that's the big mistake. That's the moment that we want people to pay attention to, that there's something else being said. And you really want to find out what that is. If you're really interested, you're going to learn that when somebody says something to you, for example, if somebody says, I would like to have a better relationship with you, that at that moment that that person says it, rather than you immediately going into, do I want to have a better relationship, you know, for you to evaluate yourself, that you actually take a moment to ask them and restate what they said. So you want a better relationship. That means what exactly? How would you know if we were having a better relationship? And that's the moment that you're finding out about the other person's experience. You still may have to talk about what you mean about a better relationship, but you're first finding out about the other person.
So in effect, you're saying you got to be curious.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay, so if you're not curious, you're not understanding what anybody's saying.
Begin with curious, begin with understanding that you really don't know what the other person is saying, even though we're speaking the same language. And it's not only true for English, it's true for Spanish or French or Italian or Arabic, that we hear words, we believe that we understand those words, and yet we have no idea what the meaning of the words are until we start asking questions.
Now, we have some idea.
Well,
what
sure.
We have no idea. Of course,
okay, we know what yes means.
If a person says, "I'm angry at you," I have an idea.
You have an idea that you have an idea that they're angry at you, but what are they angry about?
Right.
And how are they angry? And you know, what exactly are they feeling at that moment in terms of the anger? Is it, you know, something from the past? Is it something that just happened right now? So I'm angry sounds like, yeah, you're expressing your feeling, but there's actually a deletion there. They're leaving out what are they angry about or how are they angry. So that's what the person who starts to be more of a developed communicator starts to really pay attention to, is looking for the missing pieces in that language.
Dr. Rachel Hott, we're speaking about communication and what people communicate and whether or not people communicate what they really mean. So there's a lot of meaning behind what people are saying, and the first thing you have to determine is whether or not you really want to hear them. Now, a lot of people don't want to be bothered with other people. They don't want to be bothered with the meaning. They want minimal communication. They want to be able to have the other person say something so that they could pick it up and throw it back in their face at a later time. Well, you said it was fine, you know, and they don't want to know anymore. So if you're a person who doesn't care what other people feel, then this is an interesting program for you, because you should at least ask yourself, well, maybe this is what I could be doing, even though I choose not to do it.
There's also another, there's like a middle person in your description, the person who really gets bombarded by a lot of information, so would be afraid to start asking a lot of questions because it's just too much conversation.
Oh, like most husbands.
Okay.
Husbands feel this way, and they really do, even though I know some of them are going to call me up and say it's not true.
Okay. So let's say, so for the most husbands, this actually would be really helpful, because when you ask the question that is the specific question to ask, you will get the information so that when you go and do the errand that you were asked to do, you actually do it correctly so that you don't have to have more conversation about it. So it's actually an efficiency communication.
Oh, I don't think so, Rachel. I think what most men complain about, and I'm saying husband now, but I mean anybody in a relationship, I don't want to hear what you have to say, because whatever it is that you're about to say means that I'm going to have to adjust my life in some way because I'm going to hear a complaint. I don't want to hear any more complaints about what you're saying. I don't want to hear about your life. I don't want to hear about what you're unhappy about. So please do not tell me what you feel is the way most men feel in long-term relationships. They want it to be quiet. They want to be able to put the other person aside. Tell me pleasant things, but please, if you're going to tell me about complaints and problems, I don't want to hear it. So they don't want the details.
Actually, it's interesting. What you're describing is the way that men may be listening for the communication, that when their partner starts to speak, that they're already listening for the complaint. And that's an interesting trap you could get into, because sometimes the person is actually in a resourceful state and they're happy and they're just discussing something, and you're looking at it as, when am I going to finally get the hit, you know, in a verbal.
Where's the problem? What do I have to solve? How is it going to affect my life?
Right.
And you're right, because if you start listening for that, then you start creating that. But we're in a bind. We're in a bind because there are a lot of things about communication that you and I could teach that would help this not take place between couples. Couples could listen to each other and not have to avoid each other in relationship, because I think, Rachel, it is not that people don't know how to communicate. It's that people don't want to communicate. So the fact that we are doing a show today, a program today on how to communicate is based on the assumption that people want to. And I say, no, people don't want to.
Right. You're right. I do act on that assumption. That's the kind of work I do. And it's never been pointed out to me that way, that I do walk around thinking that people want to communicate. And when I meet people who you're describing, I guess that's where we could get into some stumbling blocks, because they would prefer to find avoidance. And I do actually encourage approaching conflict. You know, I don't see it as conflict. I see it as solution, you know, finding ways to open up.
You've worked with a lot of couples, and you see couples, and you see them go into dead spots the person clams up, and they just don't. They're going to put up a wall. The message is, I don't want to communicate. I don't want to know more. I want to get by without communicating. I want to live in my world.
You know, I wonder if it's also I don't know or I don't know how. That on some level haven't been taught to, you know, just like people were sort of trained not to feel their feelings, you know, in some ways, that they were taught not to communicate, and it's better to avoid that. So going hand in hand with what you're saying, do you want to, and do you even know how to?
So let's take it a step further. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Rachel Hott. So what are some of the things, let's say that you wanted to communicate a little better, or understand the other person better, if you take yourself off the hook of having to heal the problem, this is very important. Step number one, solve nothing. Step number one, you write that, I want you to write that down on a piece of paper. Solve nothing. There's no solution here. Now, this is very important. So therefore, when somebody comes to you and says, I'm tired, your job is not to get them a cup of coffee. Your job is not to get them a vitamin. Your job is not to tell them to go to sleep. Your job is nothing except to find out what they mean by tired.
And even before you even find out, the classic active listening approach of paraphrasing, which some people call parrot phrasing, which I definitely think is fun, but it's not what we mean, is that you really do want to be able to speak back and let the person know that you heard them. You know, and just to be able to give them the essential piece, so you're really feeling tired.
One of the ways of getting a person to understand what a person is saying is something that you're referring to, which is what you call a classic for people who have been in the mental health field many times, but many people listening have no idea what that means. Do it.
Okay. So one of the classic pieces is this idea of active listening, of being able to hear somebody and to be able to give them back the essence of their words. Some people call it paraphrasing. In NLP, we call it backtracking.
One of the ways that a person does it is if someone says something to you, you say back what they're saying.
Right.
Is that what we're talking
yes.
about?
Yes. So you
oh,
and I are just
simple.
Doing it.
Look how
you
easy
just did
this
it
gets.
With me, right? You just backtracked
I'm
me.
Trying, yeah, I'm yeah. trying to backtrack you. And I'm okay. trying to get you off your generalities into something real specific.
Okay.
You say something, I repeat it back to you.
Yes.
So you say to me, Armand, I'm tired.
Yes.
And I say, hey, Rachel, you're saying you're tired. Mm-hmm. Is it that simple or do I have to paraphrase it?
That's it. That's simple, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, what happens when you do that? Doesn't the other person say, yes, you idiot, that's what I just said?
Well, you know, we're using an example that maybe that wouldn't be the best one. But if somebody said, you know, I'm really frustrated, I had a horrible day at work. And you know, you're saying, wow, this seems like you had a rough day.
Right.
You
so
know,
there
just
could
kind
be
of that
some,
kind of
paraphrase.
Give back. Yeah.
Now, what this does is it opens the door for further communication.
Yes.
So step two, number one, is solve nothing. Step two is to try to repeat back what the person says to you in a paraphrase, if possible, so that they can get the idea that you're really listening.
Yes. And actually, in the dictionary, they use the definition sympathetic awareness for understanding. And I think that's where the listening comes in. At that moment, you're being aware, and you're being sympathetic to it. But you're not, again, solving anything. You could say empathetic awareness. So I think that would be really useful to think about for the second step.
So step two is to paraphrase. Now, you bring it back to somebody, and then they get this idea. Hey, they're listening.
That's right.
Oof. They're listening to me. Step three, or part of step two, look at them when you're talking to them.
Pay attention.
Look in their eyes. Pay attention to them if you could. You know, there is nothing like getting through the windows. There's nothing like stopping for a moment and giving somebody a minute of your time. Do you know, I don't think, Rachel, you and I would be in our profession if people listened to each other. Because I think what you and I do for a living, I mean, what we've done, is we sit and we give people the kind of attention that they never get. We are curious. We're interested. We say, what do you mean? Tell me about you.
We're really fascinated by people.
I am fascinated.
Right? You want to learn about somebody.
I am curious. Yes. I want to see this flower unfold. Well, what's it like to be a flower that's being invited to unfold? You know, what's it like to have somebody watch you and find beauty in almost everything you say and be curious about everything you say? So talk about communication. This is the essence of communication, giving somebody the feeling that you want to hear what they have to say.
And also being able to give them back something, you know, so it's the feeling and then some way opening up, you know, getting inside of that flower, you know, getting into the veins of the flower, so that the third step would be to begin asking a question, you know, how what made your day? We'll use the example of I had a horrible day and it was so rotten, difficult. You know, what made your day horrible? Well, you know, how specifically do you feel lousy? And in those questions, you know, how or what, you're really going for specific information. You're trying to get the next level, the greater meaning for that person. And in that, we actually don't say, why did you have a bad day?
All right, we've got a few concepts here. Let's just stick with one for a minute. Now we want to get somebody to elaborate on what they're saying, right?
Yes.
They start off with a sentence. We're listening with a sentence. We're looking at their eyes. We communicate with them. We look at them and we say, hey, you had a rough day. And they start telling you things. Now you want to get them to elaborate. So you'll say, could you tell me more about it? Can you tell me more about your day? Can you tell me more about the way you're feeling? Tell me how you're feeling. Tell me what the way it is for you. This is getting them to unflower even further by giving you minutiae, by giving you detail.
It's giving specifics. And for some people, it may be experienced as too much detail. You know, that, and that's where you want to be careful that you're just, you're going for greater meaning. You're not going for the full big novel. You're just, you know, you're sticking to that statement, and you're just saying, okay, so now I understand, which may mean you have to interrupt. So let me see if I understand. What happened today was that your boss came in, and the way that he spoke to you really got you upset. And there is that moment, like, yes, you really heard me. You know, once again, say, oh, okay. You know, and that can be it. That can be the person felt heard, felt understood. And then you can say, how about my day? You want to hear about my day? You know, you can switch it. And with some couples, it's a good idea to actually take turns in that, you know, to really be clear on that.
We're not doing couple therapy at the moment. We're trying to understand what a person is saying. So rather than switch it and get into how you get understood, although I think it's beneficial to show somebody the other side, I think the amazing thing is to listen for the communication and to keep it focused on the other person. If they get curious about you, they will be.
Right.
But if you're curious and you find out things, there are certain traps that people get caught in. And one of the big traps is the word why. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
When a person says what they feel, the worst thing you could say is, why do you feel that way? You want to talk about why?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you why. what I find with whys is that you create a lot of storytelling, a lot of justification. You start to explain what has happened. And that seems to go away from the feeling. It takes you away from the specific place that you were at before. So it's very common to use why, and it would be useful exercise, actually, to take, let's say, a two-week vacation from saying the word why, just to experiment and see what would it be like if you said somebody, how specifically did that happen, or what specifically do you mean by wanting more affection? You know, how would you know? Just if you stick to how and what, you'll find out you'll get different kinds of feedback.
It's one of the amazing things that Carl Rogers used to teach as well, one of the psychologists. He, in client-centered therapy, he would talk about how why would lead you astray easily, Gestalt therapy as well, because if somebody says they feel something, I feel sad, why do you feel sad? Asks them now to go up to their brain and find a cause for their sadness. That will lead you into some possibility. Well, maybe I'm sad because the summer's over. But if instead you ask, what's it like? How do you feel sad? Tell me about it. And they'll say, oh, I don't know. I just feel no energy. And they stay in their bodies. Well, the minute you ask the word why, you're asking a person to move out of their visceral sense into a mental sense. So why becomes the crooked letter? It becomes the letter that does take you away from your body. And I've learned from many of the Rubenfeld Synergy teachers as well that this is one of the great techniques to avoid, because to use the word why is to move you away. So now, if someone tells you what they feel, I'm so angry, instead of why are you angry, tell me about your anger.
Right.
It's a whole different communication and a very valuable lesson. 2 weeks of not saying the word why, or every time you say the word why, change it and watch what happens.
Right. Catch yourself. You do it. You know, when you're communicating and practicing, you know, we talk about editing your communication. So if you say it, you just change the word. See what happens if you restate it a different way. Another piece in that is when you're asking somebody, you know, why, what are you angry about, or how are you angry, is also to ask them, what do you mean by anger? I mean, it's a funny thing, because before we said, well, you do have an idea of what somebody means. If you acted as if you really were from another planet, and not all the time, obviously, but every once in a while, to say, so what do you really mean by it? If let's say you have your own dictionary, and that's another way of getting a good question in there, to really discover what they mean, not that one's right or wrong, but just to find out what do they really mean about, you know, about that experience. What does anger mean to them?
Because to get more, almost every emotion is felt differently by everyone else, as we've been saying here. And one of the things that you want to do is to get more of their actual experience of the emotion, because it's very different. I think women are luckier than men because they have more of a visceral sense of the way emotions feel. So when they describe them, they can actually talk about them in their bodies.
They're more familiar with describing them, so the language is more fluent.
Uh-huh.
It's something teachable. You know, it is something that you can learn, but clearly women are socialized earlier to be able to have that kind of language.
And men need shortcuts. See, that's the other thing you run into. When you're a kid, nobody really wants to hear what you feel. So your parents are always taking shortcuts, finishing your sentences, telling you what you feel, telling you what you should feel and not feel. And you've always got to deal with that. So one of the things that you have to deal with in trying to understand anyone is getting past being like your father or mother. Because that's what happens when you stop listening. You become just like your parents.
It's a lot of work because your models for communication were the people around you, and that's usually mom and dad first. And so to learn how to be your own communicating self is a wonderful task, a wonderful lifelong process to work on.
Maybe part of the resistance we have to establishing an adult communication is that it means giving up being a child. To be understood means to be with a peer rather than a parent.
That's really interesting. I think that it's something that people continually work on is finding ways to be heard and to recognize that as a child you often don't feel heard. You know, you talk down to. You know, it's you're told, you know, what's the classic line? Keep your mouth, I can't remember it, don't talk until you're spoken to, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that people really haven't permitted themselves in some ways to allow that child to grow up and say, okay, now I can really fully express myself and the other person can handle it. You know, that's the other piece.
Well, it goes a step further because in adolescent, you're going to try to figure out who you're going to be in life. And now comes the turn. You're either going to become like your parents or not like your parents. So when a person starts trying to tell you what you feel and you want to reduce it, you develop words like whatever. And whatever means I don't want to hear it. Whatever, you know. And it means I don't want to hear what you have to say. I want to shut you off just like everybody else did. I want to perpetuate. I'm now going to be the grown-up and I'm going to diss you. I'm going to put you aside. I'm going to show you I'm not interested in what you have to say. So the minute we become that, we set the template. Now this is what we're going to be. We're going to be just like our parents, not listening anymore. So it's hard to get past that. Being able to communicate with an equal is giving up your childhood, which is the tough part. This is Armand DeMille with Rachel Hott. Another thing that people do when they're listening is they interrupt. They don't let a person complete sentences. The problem with that, Rachel, is some people never stop talking.
I know. I was about to say, now I can't interrupt you as we're talking because you mentioned that. Yeah, it's a tricky thing of where to find the pause when somebody's speaking to be able to sometimes offer it with a hand gesture, you know, indicating, you know, I'd like to break in here at this point. A lot of sports people know like time out, you know, as a sort of a nonverbal. And there's also the other idea is that sometimes you think somebody's speaking for a really long time and they're really not. You just are so anxious to jump in. So there's a little bit about timing here. So, yeah, you don't want to cut off somebody and at the same time you have to jump in because you know what? If you want to really listen, you can't keep up with too much information. So you also have to say, well, let me see if I understand what you've said so far. So you have to, you know, there's a lot about getting in there at some point.
It's really difficult because now when a person finally has an opportunity to speak, because you're listening and you're not used to listening and they're not used to you listening, now you start talking and they get the floor and they want to filibuster. You know, they don't want to get off the floor. Oh, my God, he's listening. So let me tell you about this and let me tell you about this and let me tell you about this. So what happens at one point? How do you interrupt? Well, there is a way, and the way is with affection. When a person's talking to you and they seem to be going off on tangents, a little affection, a touch, a smile, an appreciation, you could cut in with a thank you. You see, when a person's in the middle of saying something that's just going on, you could say, you know, thank you for that thing you said about what happens when you get home. And you could bring them right back. So if it's done with affection, an interruption is okay.
Yes, I have never heard that before, to say thank you. I think it's a great technique. I think, you know, as long as it's, somebody doesn't feel that it's a technique, but, you know, just hearing it as a skill piece, it's a great idea to say thank you. So thank you for offering that.
Well, thank you for hearing it. It might be worthwhile. But it's what I get is that when a person is sharing themselves with me, when a person is telling me what they feel or what they're going through and they're not blaming me and I don't have to solve the problem. I mean, this is the main two things. I'm not the target and I'm not the problem solver. Take those two things away and I could listen to anything. See, so I think if you could reduce those two elements, now I'm listening and now I'm listening with gratitude. Because everything this person is saying to me is an act of love. They want to communicate with me.
Well, it would be another way to encourage people, along with the why, for, you know, avoiding why for 2 weeks, is to walk around with, at least with your partner or significant other, somebody, and just say to yourself, whatever they're going to say, I know that I don't have to solve anything, and I know that I'm not the one that they're angry at. You know, if you could just see what would it be like to walk around that way, and you may experience a dissolve of some kind of tension.
What's very interesting with that is some people on chemicals. When you work in the hospitals, you've worked in hospitals,
yes,
haven't you? One of the interesting thing about hospitals is you could get, when you work with psychiatric disturbance, a population of people who are seriously disturbed, they could be aiming at you all you want. They could be calling you the enemy. You know,
right.
It ain't your fault.
That's right.
You know this took place long before you got there.
Yeah.
So now you could be talking to somebody who's looking at you and calling you trash and part of the community and that you hate them. And you're looking at them and you're okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I recommend everybody become a therapist. Then you can tolerate anybody's yelling at you.
But that is definitely a context where you can learn that skill, you know. And it's it's harder when you're in the family, you know, when you're dealing with family members. It's just it's going to be the challenge, and you know, that's what I believe people can rise to, is that to take that moment and really, you know, establish what we said before, curiosity, you know, that this is something that you want to know more about. So there's the want to. Right there, and then go for that giving the person the experience of the full attention, and that they're being heard, and there will be benefits that we can't even guess about, because there are surprises that occur when that aspect is opened up in the intimacy of a family. I think it's a wonderful way of being in the world.
This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Rachel Hott. We're going to take a short break, play you a little music, and when we come back, we'll continue with our discussion. McCoy Tyner, Jimmy Garrison, Elvin Jones. Hell of a quartet. Ballads. The Ballad Quartet, it's actually called. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Rachel Hott. Today at WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. I want to thank all of you who joined us during the Pledge Marathon. That was really nice. Thank you for showing your support. We're talking about communication and some of the traps of communication. Some of the things that take place that make people, that make it difficult for real communication to take place. Look, the essence of real communication is wanting to. How much more could there be other than wanting to communicate? You know, if you want to, you do. So now, it's not really, I think what you say, Rachel, is, oh, people don't know how to. I think people know how to, but I think they don't want to. And I think that's the primary problem. By the time they come to you and they're learning skills on how to, they're already doing it because they want to. But even when they want to now, having gone from not wanting to communicate, because they want to live like their mothers and fathers, who never communicated with each other, but now they get to the point where they want to communicate. In the middle of it, they're going to cancel themselves out and go back to not being able to communicate. They're going to sabotage themselves. One of the ways people do it is by using the word why. Another way that people do it is to blame each other. Do you hold the other person responsible for everything you feel? When you blame someone for what you feel, you're in effect going to lose the communication. You can't blame someone for what you feel. You can't say to someone, you make me angry. It's impossible. Nobody can make you angry. They can do something, the response to which is you might get angry. But it's a sequence. Because if a child did the very same thing, you might not get angry. If your dog did the same thing, you might not get angry. So the fact that you have a feeling means that the feeling is yours and it may have been triggered by a sequence of events that had something to do with the other person's behavior. So when you looked out the window at that other woman and you smiled at her, I got jealous. Yes, that's a report of a sequence. But you made me jealous. No, you didn't do that. So step one in communication is if you blame somebody for what you feel, all that's going to happen is they're going to get defensive. Nothing's going to happen. If you want to tell them what you feel, you describe your emotion in a sequence rather than in a blame. Step number two is if you want to truly communicate to someone else, you want to employ them as your partner. You want them to be a partner in this understanding. And that does not mean to beat them over the head. You're not going to pound them into submission. You're not going to win the court battle. It's got to be a collaboration. So when I go to you and I say to you, hey, I'd like you to understand this thing about me. Here I have this little area in my house called my desk, you know? And you keep telling me that this desk is too much of a mess. But it's my area and I want to talk to you about it. Yes, I know it may not look too pretty, but I want to talk about it. I want to talk about what this means to me. Now, if you have an agenda on the other side to tell the other person that regardless of what you say, I don't want to hear it, I just want you to clean up your desk, then you're not communicating. Because what if it's really important? Now, let's say that the very same person you're talking to has a fatal disease, and they're going to die in a week. Why suddenly does it not matter whether their desk is dirty or not? Because you can clean it up in a week, that's why. No, because you look at it differently when your heart's in a different place. If people do get to the point where they could hear each other and really, really listen to each other, and their heart is in hearing and listening to each other, it begins to happen. There are, however, certain traps. Why is another trap. Asking someone when they describe themselves to account for what they feel, that's another trap of communication. A third and very common one is it comes from a very cute cartoon that I've seen with Fritz Perls. Have you seen this one, Rachel?
No.
Fritz Perls is sitting there and he's talking about what it's like to be a therapist. This is Fritz Perls, who started Gestalt therapy in the 60s and 70s. And he shows a patient with a machine gun. and the machine gun is shooting, and the bullets are saying, but. The word but has big meaning, okay? Let's talk about what that does in communication and how it's often used mistakenly.
Okay. So if we go back a couple of steps and we go back into the conversation where you're asking somebody about what are they angry about or, what, you know, tell me more about it, and it turns out that they're angry about something that happened between you and them, and it's done in the sequences. It's not done blaming. It's done in the sequences. And you are practicing your communication, and you say, so you're really angry about the fact that I left my desk a mess, but I have to have a creative flair. And all of a sudden, that but just discounted whatever you had worked so hard on in terms of having the other person feel as though they were heard.
And it could have that big an impact. The word but can have as big an impact as to reduce everything that comes before. Just think of a phrase. Think of two phrases. I'm tired, but I'm happy. Takes away I'm tired. But I'm happy. I'm happy, but I'm tired. Takes away the happy. It just kind of reduces it. It takes the first part of the phrase is thrown away with the word but. It discredits the beginning. So when a person says, trying to communicate something to you, or you're trying to communicate to them, when you but them, you're taking away what they're saying.
And it's often emphasized, we want to make sure the nonverbals are paid attention here as well, that in the tone of the voice that you'll pick up a but, you'll hear it emphasized with a little volume or a little push in terms of the speed, that you've really saying, but what I have to say is really more important, or what I really think is more important.
So a person's actually listening for the entry point when they do a but.
Yes. And some people actually listen for the but. Some people are waiting. They're so used to being discounted that they're waiting for the but. And, you can go either way. You can not give them the but, or you can give them the but. You just want to remind yourself that there are other ways of still getting your point across. And using the word and could be a very useful way.
Using and as a bridge instead of but. Now the things change when you do this. I feel disappointed, but I'm going to do it anyway. I feel disappointed and I'm going to do it anyway. It kind of carries you. You're not carrying two oppositional forces. You're saying, I can get along with both. The and really works. So does a period and a capital letter, ending the sentence.
Saying one sentence.
Say one sentence and then start another sentence. But it's the but in the middle that kind of takes away. And I know that people are going to think this is just semantics, but it is kind of remarkable.
Well, I love that expression. It's just semantics. When we say it's just, we do use words. Words do get effect. People do make meaning from words, and there are certain words that really influence and change people. But is one more of those words that can really create either harmony or disharmony in the conversation. So if you wanted to offer somebody your idea, because I think that a lot of people listening really want to make sure they get their conversation, their point of view out as well. They're tired of listening. They want to hear. They want to be heard too. And a wonderful transition is to be able to restate what the other person said and then say, and what I've been thinking about is, or how I feel is, or this is the way that I experience it. And so that and is a great transition word, which is smooth, but has that kind of pull and tug and more of a rocky kind of experience.
When people are trying to communicate very often, a person says something and then they don't remember they said it. The other person is responding to what you said and you start talking about what you said. Armando Miller with Dr. Rachel Hutt. We'd like to hear from you and to hear what you have in your own communication style and where you think you go wrong in your communication. Do you get too restless? Do you find it too difficult to communicate? Do you have situations where you think it's impossible? This is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. I love your show. I listen quite often when I can. I have a quick question for you.
Sure. What's your name?
Oh, my name is Carol.
Hello, Carol. What's your question?
my question is, I'm in a dilemma. I don't quite, I know it's my dilemma, first of all. I totally own it. I'm choosing to stay in this situation. No one is victimizing me. But I cared very deeply for this person that I'm involved with, and I try and talk about my feelings openly with the person, and the communication is so ambiguous from his point, and I sort of want to understand how to break through that.
Is he married?
No, he's not. He's quite a bit younger than I am.
Okay, so there's a separation. I was hearing a separation between the two of you. He's quite a bit younger, so when he tries to talk to you, you find that when you try to talk to him, he kind of keeps it quiet, and he can't get to you. You can't get what he's talking about. You want to get to his meaning. You want to get to his essence, and it's not available.
That is so correct.
Uh-huh.
So succinct.
So now, do you have a history of being with people who are emotionally unavailable?
I would say I didn't think so. I was married for 18 years and then have been divorced for 5. But I would say, in retrospect, you're probably right.
So there's something even about your husband when you were married, that even though you were married for 18 years, everybody knows you could be married for 18 years and have no communication at all.
I was married to a well-known musician, so yes.
Right, and well-known, it's interesting that you choose musician because musicians... Well-known musicians in general communicate a lot through music, but they're not very good verbally.
I didn't understand that when I married him because I was quite young, but yes, you're absolutely right.
I mean, that's why we use the music, and I grew up with jazz musicians who were wonderful at communicating through their instruments.
Brilliant.
but when it got down to emotions, no. So, well, let's think about this. When you were a kid, was your father good at communicating his emotions?
And my daddy died when I was 1.
So I guess he wasn't very good after that. I mean, Jesus, you know, talk up, Dad. But besides Dad, anybody else in the house? Any other men in the house?
Well, I had a very punitive, punishing grandfather.
Sure. Now, that's kind of interesting. So here we have a person, you, who has a history of needing to avoid communication, because communication that's direct is painful. And you wind up with people who can't communicate. Husband, man friend. See? So maybe it's you who are not used to receiving and being part of an effective communication.
Well, I hear you, and that's something I've looked at within myself and want to understand, you know, on a much deeper level and have studied. There's one very specific thing. If I have a moment,
sure.
If I don't, then, you know,
no, go ahead,
I appreciate your giving me your time. Well, basically, after learning to ask for what I need now and being direct and saying, I really need a hug from you. Could you give this to me? And seeing that person's response, generally these type of men don't feel comfortable with that kind of thing, and then I can feel their reticence, you know, and wanting to be open and giving that to me. Last night, I basically, because I'm very warm and wanting to be open and understand, the person that I was with, as I was saying goodnight to him at the elevator, I mirrored him. I chose not to look at him the way he chooses not to look at me, not to have any acknowledgement, any type of life-affirming action towards me in my direction. You know, oh, it was so nice of you to visit Carol or whatever. And then basically I mirrored him and left. Well, this morning, he generally never calls me. He called me and said, oh, was there something wrong? And I said, no, why do you say that? And he said, I just felt you were, you know, I felt that I made you angry. And I said, well, basically I was just sort of mirroring back to you what you give to me, not looking at you. How did that feel? And those are emotional games, and I don't really want to play them, but I thought, I'm just at a loss, Armand. I don't know how else to get through to this person. I ask him directly, And after, you know, mirroring to him his behavior, I said, he said, well, you want me to change? I said, no, I want you to be what you want to be. I can't make you anything. But I, you know, this does not feel comfortable to me, and I need you to be warmer if we're to continue in this situation. So I guess my question to you is, you know, would you recommend that kind of, you know, what mirroring technique? Or, I mean, he seemed to have responded to it, and I guess because I pulled back from him and gave him basically a mirror of himself. I didn't punish him. I don't believe I was punitive. I just said, basically, I gave you what you gave me, which was, you know, nothingness.
You know, Carol, I'd like you to run a workshop on how to do this. I listened to the likes of you. I listened to your heart. And I listened to who you are, and I say to myself, well, she's doing so fine. This is the perfect idea. You're experimenting yourself. You're finding out yourself. Your attitude is so strong about trying to make it effective, and I'm sure you're going to make it work the best you can. So do I encourage this kind of technique? Yes, I do agree that the games are not what count, but the mirroring can be very important.
Okay.
To show somebody the way they're responding to you. The fact that you got him to respond to you is kind of amazing.
And why? Why did he respond, Armand?
Because he saw you do something different.
I see.
And you did something different. It was you saying, I'm ready to break with you, because you were yesterday. Yesterday, you weren't going to suck up for the last few minutes of affection, you know?
How did you? You're so brilliant. That is so connected, and you're so right. And I want to thank you so, so much for listening to me. And I love you. I think you are so amazing. You're so honest and so direct and so, and you are so, you know, you're such a joy in the universe. And I wanted to thank you.
Carol, I feel the same way about you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So we get involved in these games. We're mostly unaware of what's really going on. We're trying. We're trying so hard. Each and every one of you out there are trying to find some safe place in life, some place where you could feel real, feel solid, feel like you want to be here, feel like there's a reason for being on this planet. So we've got techniques, and Rachel Hart and I will teach you how to get a little closer to each other and a little friendlier with each other. We'll teach you how to stroke each other's ankles and be kind to each other. But the bottom line is everybody wants to belong to something. Everybody wants to belong to someone else or something or some part. Everybody's looking to feel okay in this world in some kind of way. That's what it's about. That's why you listen to this program. However we can help you do that, I'm really proud that we do. Rachel Hart, thanks for being with us. You know, a little while ago, I thought of it as a kind of a carnival. Welcome, my friends. Welcome to the wonderful world of feelings. The wonderful world of feelings, our latest attractions, created for the incredible journey through inner space. That's it. Step right up and travel with us through the core of your inner being. Now travel at your own risk and make sure you keep the small children away from the edges. The management takes no responsibility for anything whatsoever in this amusement park. The amusement park, the world of feelings. Hey, over there on your left, through the dark corridor, you'll find two of our most popular rides, Longing and Anguish. Known for their endless depth and incomparable feeling of having a reason for not doing anything with your life except staying on the ride, Longing and Anguish. Right next to that is a ride that has been with us from the very first day we opened. We call it The Same. That's what the ride is called. It has footsteps on the floor that you can easily follow. Many people come to our park only for The Same. It has not changed, not one iota in 20 years. Every day you do The Same. It's exactly like the time before. You know, it's our safest ride. It has no extremes, no surprises. The same. Now, over there in the park, you can enter another ride, which we call Possibility. This ride takes you to places that you may have read about in magazines or seen in movies. It is lined with unmarked doors. The Ride of Possibility. A great ride. But it's never attended by people who love the same, you know? The people who go to the same are very different than the people who go into the doors of Possibility. Hey, listen, take the elevator down to the bottom floor and walk through the muddy area called Love. At first, it looks familiar, like these two other rides, Friendship and Sex. But, you know, you're in love when you realize that there's nothing to hold on to. There's no safety net here, no railing, because it makes the trip more exciting. Now, if you want a real rush, try the Anger Tram. For just one ticket, you can ride forever, as many people do. They get on Anger, and they never get off it. Do you know those folks? They love the Anger ride. Further on down, you could take Guilt, which is another nice ride. Some people just stay guilty forever. And Depression. Depression is one where everyone, even when you try to get out of it, the bar seems to be locked across the car. You can't lift yourself out of it. You need somebody to reach down and extend a hand. You can exchange your ticket on the Depression trip, by the way, for the Anger Tram just to get off the treadmill. It works, by the way. Just exchange the Depression ticket because the opposite of depression is anger, you see? So it's real easy. Now, if you're feeling a slight chill and you want a slight warming, head over to the Jealousy. It's a great temperature rising. Envy is also available within a few steps of Jealousy, but Jealousy and Envy will raise your temperature like few other things will. Certainly not boring. And for an interesting kiddie ride, try Greed. Guaranteed to keep you entertained for a while, occupying each thought with possession of toys, and more toys, and more toys, and more things, and more things. The one with the most toys at the end, you guessed it, wins. And when you win, you stay on the Greed trip for free, over and over again. Hey, you know, all these rides are great. And when you've completed the bunch, there's a little surprise waiting for you at the exit. Yep, the exit, that's quite a trip. The exit is a ride all its own. Everybody goes through the exit at one time or another in their lives. Some take the trip often. Others wait until the last moment, just as the park is closing. Either way, my friends, the exit is our best event. Lastly, we're sorry to announce that our new attraction, Compassion, is closed for renovation. Seems that many people wanted to be the object of compassion, but very few volunteered to be the subject. So we're redesigning now and expect to complete it before the turn of the century. You know, following the exit, you may choose to remain exited, as many people do. Most, however, they take this other ride, which is a wonderful thing. They come into the park, and it's only available to people who have kind of looked through the exit, and it's called Remain Involved. Remain Involved is a ride that has a lot of consciousness to it. It takes a lot of awareness. It's a wonderful ride. Remaining Involved is a cruise which persists indefinitely. You'll find this journey to be effortless, though somewhat tiring, especially if you have mastered our kiddie rides, Momentum, Inertia, Must, Have To, and Should. Hey, my friends, what rides do you take every day? What's your emotional roller coaster? Where have you chosen to go? This is Armand DeMille. We want to take you on the emotional roller coaster. On the ride, the kiddie park, the wonderful world of feelings. We're going to have to be going right now, my friends. If you wanted to hear today's program again, you could go to WBAI.org, or you can go to thepositivemind.com, where you'll hear a lot of archives. And you could send an email also to Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. I'd love to hear from you and hear your reaction. Be back with you soon, my friends.
You are listening to The Positive Mind with Armand Jamil on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial.
This is listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, bringing you news, information, and programming meant to empower you. We need your support. If you go to our website, WBAI.org, and press the donate button, for as little as $10 a month, you can become a sustaining member. You'll be making a tax-deductible contribution that helps us help you by bringing you truth in radio. Thank you.